Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI reminds the faithful that the unity that comes from God requires our daily commitment to be open to one another in love. We look ahead to the Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul on January the 25th, the same day that marks the end of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity. Abbot Timothy Wright reflects on the significance of the upcoming Day of Memory for Victims of the Holocaust. And film critic Peter Malone tells us about the joyful return of the Muppets. Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday reminded the faithful that the unity that comes from God requires our daily commitment to be open to one another in love. Speaking to pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square for the Angelus prayer, the Pope noted that this is the week of prayer for Christian unity, and he invited everyone to participate in large numbers in the Vespers that will be held on the 25th in the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls, where representatives of other Christian churches will also be present. And as Chris Altieri reports, Benedict also commented on this year's theme for the week, All Shall Be Changed by the Victory of Our Lord Jesus Christ.
The profound spiritual connection between the desire for Christian unity and the desire for authentic liberty was the focus of Pope Benedict XVI's remarks before the Angelus prayer with the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square this Sunday.
L'odierna domenica cade nel mezzo della settimana di preghiera per l'unità dei cristiani.
Speaking ahead of the traditional prayer of Marian devotion, the Holy Father recalled the theme of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity, which opened this past Wednesday, taken from the first letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians. We will all be changed by the victory of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Tutti saremo trasformati dalla vittoria di Gesù Cristo, nostro Signore.
Material for the 2012 Week of Prayer for Christian Unity has been prepared by a working group composed of representatives of the Catholic Church, the Orthodox Church, the Old Catholic and Protestant Churches active in Poland.
In effetti, la Polonia ha conosciuto.
In effect, said Pope Benedict, Poland has known a long history of courageous struggle against many different forms of adversity, and has repeatedly given proof of great determination, animated by faith. He went on to say, through the course of the centuries, Polish Christians have spontaneously intuited a spiritual dimension in their desire for freedom, and they have understood that the true victory can be achieved only if it is accompanied by a profound interior transformation.
La vera vittoria può giungere solo.
It was a subject to which the Holy Father returned in his English remarks.
I greet all the English-speaking pilgrims and visitors present to this Angelus. This week, Christians throughout the world mark the week of prayer for Christian unity. We are confident that, as St. Paul says, we will all be changed by the victory of our Lord Jesus Christ. Let us renew our prayer for the unity of all of Christ's followers and deepen our resolve to be one in Him. Upon each of you and your loved ones at home, I invoke God's blessings of peace and joy.
Pope Benedict XVI also had greetings for those who, on Monday, begin Lunar New Year celebrations.
Auguro a tutti quei popoli.
In the present world situation of economic and social crisis, said Pope Benedict, I express the hope that the new year be marked by justice and peace, that it bring relief to those who suffer, and that young people, especially with their enthusiasm and their idealistic drive, might offer new hope to the world. I'm Chris Altieri.
Thanks there to Chris Altieri for that report. January the 25th is in fact the feast of the conversion of St. Paul, and as Pope Benedict was reminding us, it's also the day that marks the end of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity, a worldwide movement of Christians of many denominations engaged in praying and working for the unity of Christians in the service of peace. The week's programme includes many events, lectures and liturgies, but the culminating event takes place on the last day of the week with the evening prayer in the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls, presided by Pope Benedict XVI.
It's always a very big event, this celebration of the conversion of St. Paul.
Benedictine monk Father Edmund Power is the abbot of the Monastery of St. Paul's outside the walls in Rome.
We have two major feasts of St. Paul in the Church's year, the conversion on the 25th of January, and then, of course, the feast he shares with St. Peter on the 29th of June. But the 25th of January has become traditionally the great celebration in the Basilica presided by the Pope, to mark also the end of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity.
As I mentioned earlier, this particular celebration traditionally has its conclusion at St. Paul's. Why, I asked the abbot, is it because St. Paul is considered the ecumenical saint par excellence?
Well, I think so. I think he's the most important ecumenical figure in a certain way within the Church's history. I don't know exactly why the week from the 18th to the 25th of January was established as the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity throughout the world, but I suspect it was connected with the Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul, the 25th, so it always finishes with this feast. But Paul, way beyond others, was a man of huge vision. And we, the Benedictine community who are here as custodians of his sanctuary, we're very proud of him, of course.
Is he buried here?
Yes. This is the place traditionally where his body was brought, because it was a cemetery on the Ostian Way outside the walls of Rome. He was martyred probably around the year 65 in the vicinity and was buried here in the cemetery. And gradually, after a while, the first basilica was built under the Emperor Constantine and then the great basilica we see now. So it's always been the point of reference for St. Paul. But I've said this several times, but it always strikes me as how pertinent, how relevant it is that his sanctuary is outside the walls, St. Paul's outside the walls, because his vision wasn't limited by anything. Peter, the great saint of Rome, along with Paul, was strongly dedicated to the family of Israel and had to be persuaded step by step that the message of Jesus was for all men, not just for men and women of the Jewish faith, of the people of Israel. But he accepted it, of course, but it took time. But Paul saw it from the start. And being outside the walls, not being limited by any particular interest, makes him a saint very suitable, very, very relevant for this whole work of bringing Christians of all the different denominations together into one. So it's an extremely happy juxtaposition of facts, I think.
Also, as I mentioned earlier, the ceremony chosen to close the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity is the Vespers, the Church's evening prayers. Father Power explained to me why the Vespers, and not the Eucharist, for example, is just right for the occasion.
Well, that's because the Eucharist is a point of a stumbling block in a certain way, because sharing Eucharist means sharing communion, and sharing communion means having arrived at unity. That's the Catholic theology of the Eucharist. Others have different views, but celebrating a Eucharist is not a hugely ecumenical act within this context. But what we can share is prayer.
Thank you.
This week, we also mark the International Day of Memory for victims of the Holocaust, rejecting any denial of the Holocaust as an historical event, either in full or in part. The United Nations has condemned without reserve all manifestations of religious intolerance, incitement, harassment, or violence against persons or communities based on ethnic origin or religious belief whenever they occur. Thus, in 2005, the unanimously voted Resolution 60/7 designated the 27th of January, the anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp, as an annual day of commemoration. Concurrently, the UN also urged member states to develop educational programs to instill the memory of the tragedy in future generations to prevent genocide from occurring again. As Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright says in his reflection, the Holocaust was a turning point in history which must prompt the world to say never again.
Over 6 million Jewish people and several other million people of different groups, particularly handicapped people, the Roma and the Sinti group, were just systematically exterminated in gas chambers or just starved to death or beaten to death or shot. It left a deep, deep wound, not only among Jewish people whose brothers and sisters, whose cousins and uncles and aunts were involved, but also among every member of the human race. For, as Martin Luther King said,
injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. And so, as part of a way of honouring that effect, remembering that effect, the 27th of January is the day that the world recalls in silence the horror that was perpetrated during those years. And of course, there are still many people, a few people of the Jewish community and the Roma people who survived those camps, who bear witness, eloquent witness to the horror, the dehumanization, the violence, degradation that went on there. But there is also those who are alive still, Catholics, Protestants, who were part of that Nazi regime. Not in the big political sense, but they were members of the armed forces called up to do national service. They were part of a state in which these terrible atrocities were happening. And not just in Germany, but in Poland and in other parts of the Axis Empire. They must carry a burden on their conscience, and rightly so. Should they have done more? Should they have taken a stand? And then there are, of course, many other people who have been victims of genocide. One thinks of the Armenian genocide during the First World War. Hundreds of thousands of Armenians, so it is claimed, died, starved, beaten, shot, simply because they were Armenian. A very powerful moment for the Armenian peoples to remember their dead. So this Holocaust Memorial Day brings with it an awful lot more. But what is interesting and thought-provoking for us as we commemorate this day is that the Holocaust is used, if you like, as the point, the light, which illuminates other atrocities since then against the innocent. And of course, there have been many millions of people who have died in Rwanda, for example, in Cambodia, for example, in Russia, for example, in the Stalin death camps, and in China too, and Tibet. And it is a reminder that there is alive within us, even today, people who find it necessary to be violent to the other. Whether the other is disabled, homosexual, whether the other is of a different religion, whether the other is just a different nationality, speaks a different language. But it's the innocence of being other which provokes this terrible feeling of violence of one to the other. The importance of this day goes back to the truth that the United Nations supported this resolution 60/7 unanimously. And that says a great deal about the cause which it's aimed to confront. Yes, there are structures in our world, whether they're to do with religion, whether they're to do with wealth, whether they're to do with nationality or color or ability, which militate against the weak or the otherness. Innocent people discriminated against in whatever way are being told not just you're not part of our community, but you are not able to access the benefits that we have. Whether it's medical, whether it's basic food, whether it's a job, whether it's the right to vote, or whether it's just to be different, to worship. And one of the areas in which this has grown exponentially is, of course, in the area of abortion. So we can see that innocence has a very wide application. And the education that the organizers of this day seek to promote is an education in mutual respect. It's an education in how to understand the difference. The difference between Christian and Muslim. The difference between democracy and dictatorship. The difference between my rights and my duty towards the other. The difference between those who care for another human being simply because she or he is a human being, and the one who sees his life or her life as a way to gaining power to dominate, discriminate, to become wealthy, to stand above. And that is the important lesson that each of us has to take on board. Because we may not have been part of the Holocaust. We may not have been part of the people whose passive cooperation with or working within the Nazi regime makes them at least a distant accessory. But we are, in how we behave towards the other, inheritance of that rivalry, that self-centeredness, that sense of superiority, which is the start of discrimination. And the history of the Jewish people, the people among whom Jesus was born, Jesus as honored by Muslim and Christian, their history in the 2,000 years since Jesus' life is one that would make many Muslims and many Christians embarrassed. Massacres, discrimination, suspicion, simply for being Jewish. In a sense, the Holocaust was the culmination of something that had been going on at a lower intensity for hundreds of years. And it is good to remember that the Holocaust didn't suddenly spring up in 1930s. The seeds were sown much earlier. We mustn't forget that Hitler himself was educated in a Catholic school. We mustn't forget that the cooperation of many church members, either through their unwillingness to speak out, was at least compromising of their faith. We mustn't forget that the number of martyrs, Jägerstätter and Bonhoeffer, stand out as great names. And where are those people today standing out against the discrimination and violence against the innocent. So yes, it is an important day. It's an important day for each of us to recognize the difficulties we have, our own prejudices, and try to correct them. It is the day when we say sorry. It is the day when before God we are repentant. But it is also the day to remember that under God, each of us is a daughter or a son of God. And each of us has an eternal destiny in God. And that whatever horrors have happened in human history, whether in the last 100 years or in the thousands of years before that, within the vision of God is capable of healing through the death of that innocent one on a cross, whose resurrection conquered forever the insidious negativity and destruction of death, however it comes about, and offers to those willing to accept it a gift of resurrection of life, in which the wounds of exploitation, of genocide, of murder are removed, in which the attitudes of discrimination are purified, because it's all taken into a love which is so all-embracing, so complete, so fulfilling, that the other is only and can only be seen as the image of the love that I wish to be, and is the one who communicates to me the fulfillment that is my deepest desire and the promise that God has made through Jesus Christ to each one of us, no matter what we have done or thought, because the effect of the crucifixion and resurrection is the forgiveness of all sin, the purification of all injury, the removal of all prejudice, and the fulfillment of the deepest wish of union of the most widely different people in attitude and temperament, ability, in health, in social standing, all that brought together in the oneness who is God, who is love, forever.
As Vatican Radio's film critic Peter Malone observes, usually it's the children who are taken to see a show that is considered suitable for them. With the Muppets, it's the film that children could take their parents and their grandparents to see. This, he says, is especially true if those adults, who are not getting any younger, have fond memories of Sesame Street and The Muppet Show.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side?
My big problem with watching The Muppets is that I was enjoying it so much, and I was wondering whether children, you know, would be enjoying it. It's obviously geared to children, but let me tell you this story. I noticed a reviewer at the press preview in front of me. She was really enjoying it. You could feel the vibes and hear some laughter, and she had her 8-year-old daughter with her. So I was wondering, is the 8-year-old really responding to the Muppets, or does she know who the Muppets are? So I asked the reviewer later, and she said, no, she didn't. The child didn't know who the Muppets were. The only character on screen she could identify was Selena Gomez. And I'm not sure the timing of the grandparents taking their grandchildren to see the Muppets will know who Selena Gomez is. So it's a bit of a generation gap.
Although Sesame Street is still going strong, and I can say that because my son goes on the internet and plays Sesame Street interactive games and all sorts of things. So he knows who the Muppets are.
It's time to meet the Muppets.
Yes! Come on, guys, let's go!
Wow, I can't believe we're all back together.
Yeah!
That's very good to hear. I found it a delight, because When the series was on in the late 70s, early 80s, even in our community, we all enjoyed watching the Muppets. And somehow the personalities and the humour, the songs, really got to us in those days. So I found it wonderful to see them back again.
The Muppets have always been about artistic integrity, not cheap tricks.
Check it out. Fart shoes.
The film is really about getting the old gang back together again, isn't it?
Yes, they use that device. Apparently, I didn't realise this, but some of the films that they made in the 90s, Muppet Treasure Island and Muppet Christmas Carol, weren't so successful, so that they've been having a rest, in fact. And this is the opportunity, and there are two brothers, one's a Muppet and one's a human, but they get on very well together, and they go with the fiancé to Los Angeles and try to find the studio and the museum and Kermit himself. And when they do, they decide to try to round everyone up.
We're trying to get the old gang back together again.
We haven't done this in a long time.
Your fans never left you. The world hasn't forgotten.
Sure, it's impossible, but we've got to try. It's time to play the music.
But Miss Piggy is over in Paris as an editor of Vogue, and her assistant is played by Emily Blunt, doing more or less the same role she did with Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada. So there's a lot of in-jokes, I think, for the adult audience as well.
Is the singing still so great?
Oh, yes, there's a lot of singing and a lot of humour.
You think we should have rented a bigger car?
Jack Black, they find at an anger management course, and when they're told by the studios to get a celebrity to host, they force him to come and do it, but they tie him up. So there's a whole lot of repartee where he's actually comparing the show but arguing with them all the time.
Ow, that hurt!
And there's a plot about, you know, they want to, a rich man. Actually, he's called Texas Rich Man, and he wants to buy the studios and demolish it and put up something else. So they're fighting that kind of development as well. So When the Muppet movie came out in 1981, I thought that the song, The Rainbow Connection, was a bit gooey. But as they sing it in this new film, I again became rather nostalgic. It reminded me of the Muppets in the past. So I suggested that it's not the film parents and grandparents take their children to see, but let the children take the parents and the grandparents, and they can enjoy it.
What's so amazing that keeps us stargazing? And what do we think we might see?
Without giving too much away, Peter, do Kermit and Miss Piggy get together again?
They do. They do. I mean, it couldn't be otherwise, could it?
Maybe you don't need the whole world to love you, you know? Maybe you just need one person.
Oh, Kermit!
But she's just as rambunctious as usual and dominating everybody. And Kermit is his nice self, and there's Fozzie Bear and Animal and all the rest of them. Some of the others I would have liked to have seen a bit more of, but maybe if this is successful, they'll make another one.
For nostalgics like you and I.
Yes.
And I don't care what anybody says. I believe in you. And you.
You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.